Picture a poisonous mushroom, right? You are probably imagining something dark, gnarly, and foul-smelling, like hiding in the damp shadows of an old-growth forest, something that just screams danger with every spore, warning you to stay
Right,
away.
something distinctly unappetizing.
Exactly. But the most famous mushroom in human history is bright scarlet. It is speckled with perfect little white polka dots, and it is practically begging you to pick it up. I mean, it is the mushroom from Alice in Wonderland, from the Mario Brothers games, from almost every fairy tale you ever read as a kid.
Yeah, the Amanita muscaria, or commonly known as the fly agaric. It represents the absolute definition of deceptive packaging in the natural world.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are taking you on a journey into the world's most recognizable fungi, and our mission today is simple. We want to tear down the pop culture mythology surrounding this iconic red mushroom and replace those fireside tales with rigorous neuroscience and documented history.
Which is incredibly necessary right now. The mushroom wellness market is absolute chaos at the moment. You, the listener, really need a critical edge to understand what is actually happening when a product makes bold claims about your brain chemistry.
To build that understanding, we are drawing on a remarkably comprehensive 2026 article from the OOTW Journal. It is titled Amanita muscaria, the neuroscience of fly agaric.
Yeah, this source is fantastic because it strips away all the marketing noise. It looks exclusively at the hard pharmacological and historical data.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start by dismantling the single most repeated misconception about this famous mushroom. If I say the phrase magic mushroom, you immediately think of psychedelics, right?
Oh, absolutely. People think of psilocybin, LSD, that whole 1960s tie-dye aesthetic.
Exactly. But this journal article drops a massive reality check right out of the gate. Amanita muscaria is not a psychedelic.
No, not at all.
Calling the fly agaric a magic mushroom is like calling a heavy prescription sleep aid an energy drink. They are playing in completely different chemical stadiums. So if it is not a psychedelic, what exactly is the chemical doing to the brain?
What's fascinating here is that to understand what the fly agaric is, we first have to look at the mechanism of those classic psychedelics. So, molecules like psilocybin and LSD, they act on the serotonin system.
Okay, the serotonin system.
Right. Specifically, they excite the 5-HT2A serotonin receptor. When that happens, and you look at an EEG of the brain, you see what neuroscientists call cortical desynchronization.
I like to visualize that like an orchestra where the conductor just walked out. Suddenly, every single musician decides to play their own improvised jazz solo all at once.
That is a great way to picture it. The brain's normal, rigid, orderly rhythms loosen up and get chaotic.
And that is where a user gets that classic ego-dissolving clarity in those visionary journeys.
Exactly. But Amanita muscaria does not touch that serotonin machinery. It operates on an entirely different switchboard. It targets the brain's primary inhibitory system, which is known as the GABA system.
So it is doing the exact opposite.
Pretty much. In EEG studies, instead of that wild, jazz-like desynchronization, the fly agaric produces cortical synchronization.
Oh, wow. So it forces the whole orchestra to play one slow, heavy, continuous drone note. It locks things down rather than opening them up.
Right. The medically and pharmacologically correct classification for the fly agaric is a GABAergic deliriant, or, in clinical terminology, a dissociative sedative with narrogenic properties.
Ionogenic meaning dream-inducing, right?
Correct. Pharmacologically, this mushroom belongs on the exact same shelf as alcohol or the sleep drug gabaxadol. It has absolutely no business being grouped with psilocybin.
Which changes the entire expectation of the experience.
It really does. The experience is not about lucid clarity. It is a fluctuating sleep-tinged delirium filled with vivid dreams, distorted perception, and severely disordered thought.
I mean, a gabadergic delirium sounds significantly less like a transcendent spiritual trip and much more like a bizarre medical event.
It basically is a medical event.
And when we look at the chemistry causing this event, things get incredibly weird. This mushroom is not just doing one single thing to you. The article describes the intoxication as a biological tug of war.
A literal tug of war, yes.
There are two entirely different molecules inside this one tiny mushroom pulling your brain in opposite directions.
Understanding those two molecules, muscimol and ibotenic acid, that unlocks the entire mechanism of this fungus. Let's look at muscimol first.
Okay, the sedative part.
Right. Muscimol is a structural analog of GABA, which is the brain's main inhibitory neurotransmitter. It binds directly to the orthosteric pocket of the GABA receptor.
Wait, let me stop you there. Orthosteric pocket.
It just means it binds to the primary active site on the receptor. Specifically, it acts as a superagonist at extrasynaptic delta subunit receptors. Once it binds, it opens up a chloride channel, hyperpolarizes the neuron, and severely damps its firing.
Wait, chloride channel. Let's break that down for a second so we have a clear picture of what is happening inside the head.
Sure, go for it.
That means the muscimol is physically forcing a doorway open on the cell, flooding the inside of the brain cell with negatively charged chloride ions, right?
Exactly.
So the cell becomes too negatively charged to generate an electrical spark. It literally cannot fire.
That is a perfect translation of hyperpolarization. It perfectly mimics the brain's natural off switch. And those specific delta subunit receptors happen to be the exact same population of receptors that alcohol engages.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that is the pharmacological reason why the fly agaric state is so heavy and depressant.
Yeah.
And it only takes a threshold dose of about 6 milligrams of muscimol to trigger these profound silencing effects.
Okay, so muscimol is the heavy blanket pulling you down into sedation.
Yeah.
But then we have the second molecule, ibotenic acid, and its function is the exact opposite.
Complete opposite. If muscimol mimics the brain's primary stop signal, ibotenic acid mimics the brain's primary go signal.
It's an excitatory compound.
Right. It is a structural analog of glutamate, the main excitatory neurotransmitter. It acts as a potent agonist at NMDA receptors. It excites the brain so aggressively that, in excess, it functions as an excitotoxin.
Let's explain excitotoxicity because it sounds absolutely terrifying.
It is not great for your brain, that's for sure.
Right, so normal glutamate tells a brain cell to fire and then it lets go. But an excitotoxin like ibotenic acid latches on to that go receptor and refuses to let go.
Exactly, it jams the signal.
It holds the doorway open so calcium ions just endlessly flood into the cell, overstimulating the neuron until it literally burns itself out and dies.
Neuroscientists actually use synthetic ibotenic acid as a standard tool in the laboratory for this exact reason. When they need to deliberately lesion or destroy specific brain regions in animal studies to observe the resulting behavioral deficits, they inject ibotenic acid.
Wow. And it's just sitting there in the mushroom.
Yes. Here is the crucial biological imbalance present in nature. A single fresh cap of Amanita muscaria contains roughly 9 times more ibotenic acid, around 70 milligrams, than it does muscimol.
See, I am struggling to understand why any human being would ever intentionally forage this.
It does seem counterintuitive.
If a single cap has 70 milligrams of a brain-lesioning excitotoxin and only a tiny fraction of a sedative, aren't you just guaranteeing yourself neurological damage? The math of that 9-to-1 ratio sounds like a complete biological trap.
Well, that intense chemical conflict is what dictates the strange phenomenology of the mushroom. The intoxication waxes and wanes because of that ratio.
How so?
Because there is so much more ibotenic acid initially, it acts like a brick thrown onto a car's gas pedal. This drives an excited phase. The user experiences severe agitation, muscle twitching, a flushed feeling of warmth, and a bizarre floating sensation.
But the body is simultaneously processing the muscimol, which acts like yanking the emergency brake all the way up while that brick is still on the gas pedal.
Right. And the engine cannot overcome the emergency brake forever. The muscimol eventually drags the central nervous system down into a comatose deep sleep phase.
So you're just bouncing between extremes.
Yeah, the user oscillates back and forth between manic excitation and absolute depression over a period of up to 24 hours. The pharmacology maps flawlessly onto what the user actually feels.
The sheer violence of that biological tug of war makes the historical record of this mushroom seem almost impossible. I mean, if eating it raw delivers a massive dose of an excitotoxin, ancient Siberian cultures couldn't have just been stumbling through the forest snacking on these caps.
No, definitely not.
They had to have engineered a solution to safely consume it.
And they did. Traditional preparers developed a solution entirely rooted in chemistry, long before modern laboratories even existed. They discovered that the mushroom must be dried and heated before use.
Just drying it.
Yeah. When you apply gentle heat and remove the moisture, the ibotenic acid undergoes a chemical reaction called decarboxylation.
Okay, decarboxylation. That means the molecule physically loses a single carbon dioxide component, right?
Precisely.
But how does dropping one piece of carbon dioxide magically turn a brain-damaging excitotoxin into a sleep-inducing sedative?
Well, by shearing off that carbon dioxide, the molecule's physical 3D structure fundamentally changes. It goes from a shape that perfectly fits the brain's NMDA gas pedal receptor to a shape that perfectly slots into the GABA brake pedal receptor.
That is wild.
Isn't it? The unstable, highly toxic ibotenic acid essentially folds itself into the stable, brain-penetrant muscle.
So they're artificially increasing the sedative effect while completely neutralizing the brain-lesioning toxin.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant ancient biohack. They are manipulating the molecular shape to raise the usable potency and drop the toxic load. And just to clarify for anyone listening, this drying process is entirely separate from parboiling.
Good point. We should distinguish those.
Right, because some modern foragers parboil the mushroom in huge pots of water and then discard the water. That process simply strips out all the water-soluble compounds to make the mushroom edible as regular food. Drying it is an intentional chemical conversion specifically for psychoactive use.
Basically, food preparation removes the compounds, whereas drying transforms them.
But drying was not the only hack they developed. Here is where it gets really interesting. We have to address the Siberian shamanism documented in the article, specifically the practice of urine recycling.
Yes, the rigorous ethnographies from the Jessup expedition meticulously documented the ritual use of this mushroom, specifically by the Koryak, Chukchi, and Evenki peoples of Siberia.
And they weren't just using it for fun.
No, for these groups, consumption was not casual recreation. It was a highly specialized shamanic practice utilized for spirit contact and healing.
And they realized something incredible about how the mammalian body processes these specific chemicals. Muscimol and ibotenic acid are not heavily metabolized by the liver, are they?
No, they aren't. They bypass typical breakdown pathways and excrete through the urine largely unchanged.
So herders observe their reindeer actively seeking out the fly agaric in the wild and subsequently behaving in a visibly drunken manner.
Right. And the herders would then collect and drink the urine of the intoxicated reindeer, or even the urine of a shaman who had consumed the dried mushroom.
They were using the animal's kidneys or the shaman's kidneys as a biological filter.
Exactly.
The kidneys filter out the harsher, nausea-inducing constituents of the raw fungus while passing the psychoactive muscimol straight through. It allowed them to re-experience the effects safely without the severe gastrointestinal distress. The ingenuity is fascinating.
It really is a marvel of early observational science.
But when we look at the modern perception of this history, there is a massive disconnect. I mean, if you spend 5 minutes looking this mushroom up online, you see the exact same memes everywhere.
Oh, the memes are endless.
People confidently claim that Alice in Wonderland's size changing was inspired by Lewis Carroll eating this mushroom. They also claim that Santa Claus is just a secularized Siberian fly agaric shaman.
Pointing to the red and white suit, of course.
Right, and the flying reindeer, and the tradition of coming down a chimney, which resembles entering a snowed-in yurt through the smoke hole. We see these Santa Claus and Alice Wonderland memes constantly. How much of that is actual history?
We really must draw a hard line here between documented ethnography and modern internet mythology. Let's analyze Alice in Wonderland first. Amanita muscaria can indeed cause a sensory distortion called micropsia and micropsia.
Which is what, exactly?
It is the neurological sensation that the surrounding world or one's own body parts are rapidly swelling or shrinking.
Which sounds exactly like Alice eating one side of the mushroom to grow taller and the other side to shrink.
The aesthetic parallel is strong, I'll give it that. But there is zero historical evidence that Lewis Carroll ever consumed the fly agaric. Serious literary and historical scholars reject the connection.
So where did the idea come from?
The scientifically sound explanation is that Carroll suffered from severe documented migraines. Clinical migraines frequently produce those exact same perceptual size distortions. Modern neurologists literally refer to that specific visual aura as Alice in Wonderland syndrome.
Okay, so we can confidently rule out Alice, but the Santa Claus myth is far more pervasive. The visual and narrative similarities seem almost too deliberate to be a coincidence.
They do seem deliberate, but folklorists who specialize in Siberian and Sami cultures firmly reject the Santa Claus connection. Santa's true lineage is incredibly well documented in the historical record, and it has nothing to do with shamanic mushroom rituals.
No mushrooms at all.
None. The modern Santa traces directly from the historical St. Nicholas to Clement Clark Moore's 1823 poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, which, by the way, introduced the concept of the flying reindeer, and finally to the 19th century visual illustrations of Thomas Nast, who gave us the red suit with white trim.
So it's all just a modern projection?
Exactly. The internet loves to retroactively fit the mushroom into these stories, but the historical timelines do not support it.
It is funny how the misinterpretation of history directly fuels how people misunderstand this mushroom today. Which brings us to the bizarre, contradictory double life the Amanita muscaria leads in our modern world.
Contradictory is the perfect word for it.
On one side, you have the highly regulated, pristine world of laboratory science, where this mushroom's derivatives are used as precision tools.
Right. Neuroscientists rely on muscle mole precisely because it acts as a neurological stop sign. They use it to reversibly silence highly targeted regions of the brain. The journal article highlights a brilliant 2024 study published in PNAS.
What did they do in that study?
Researchers infused muscle mole directly into the temporal lobes of primates to temporarily inactivate face-selective neurons.
Wow, okay. So they isolated the exact cluster of brain cells responsible for recognizing faces and used this mushroom compound to turn the power off in just that one room of the brain.
Exactly. They could observe exactly how the primate's visual processing and social behavior changed when facial recognition went offline.
And because it's muscle mole, the effect naturally wears off, and the neurons return to normal function without suffering the kind of permanent excitotoxic damage that ibotenic acid would cause.
Precisely.
Goodness.
It is a wildly elegant application of pharmacology.
But then we contrast that elegant scientific utility with the reality of the consumer market. You walk into a neighborhood smoke shop or open a social media app, and you see this exact same mushroom being sold in brightly colored gummy packages.
Yeah, it's a completely different landscape.
The marketing promises enhanced focus, anxiety relief, and a perfect night of sleep.
The danger of this consumer market requires us to look closely at toxicity versus lethality. The fly agaric has a formidable reputation as a killer, but that reputation is largely borrowed from its deadly botanical cousins.
Like the death cap.
Right. Mushrooms like the death cap or the destroying angel contain amatoxins, which aggressively and irreversibly destroy the liver.
But the OOTW journal article explicitly notes that Amanita muscaria contains zero amatoxins.
None at all.
Looking at the data, out of more than 145,000 mushroom exposures reported to U.S. poison control centers between 1999 and 2018, only 0.04% were fatal. And almost none of those fatalities were attributed to the fly agaric. It is not a liver-destroying poison.
The acute danger lies in the context of its use and its combinations, because muscimol forcefully depresses the GABA system. Mixing it with other central nervous system depressants like alcohol, benzodiazepines, or barbiturates creates a compounding effect.
Which suppresses the nervous system too much.
Yes. The nervous system becomes so suppressed that it forgets to signal the lungs to breathe, causing severe respiratory depression. The article also issues a critical warning for medical professionals treating Amanita ingestions.
What is the warning?
If a patient arrives in the emergency room, reflexively administering the drug atropine is a dangerous error.
Why is that an error?
Atropine only treats the trace amounts of muscarine found in the mushroom. It does absolutely nothing for the central GABA and NMDA crisis. Administering it can actually worsen the patient's delirium and tachycardia.
So it is a highly volatile substance that demands respect, which makes the explosion of consumer gummies deeply concerning. The article cites a 2026 review in Frontiers in Pharmacology, which states bluntly that there are absolutely zero completed human efficacy trials for consumer fly agaric products.
Zero. All the claims about sleep and focus are based entirely on unverified anecdotal reports and observational data scraped from social media.
But the lack of clinical trials is only part of the problem. The adulteration of these products poses a much more immediate threat.
A massive threat, really.
A 2024 CDC field report tested five different commercial brands of Amanita gummies. They discovered that three out of the five brands actually contained unlabeled Schedule I psilocybin.
Which is staggering. This means a listener could walk into a shop today, purchase what they believe to be a legal, non-psychedelic GABA sedative for sleep, and accidentally ingest a serotonergic psychedelic.
Or, as the CDC report also found, they could be ingesting undisclosed kratom or ephedrine.
Right. The consumer is subjected to random doses of opioids, stimulants, or classic psychedelics entirely against their knowledge.
That is a massive failure of regulation. How is a product with such a chaotic chemical profile legally sitting on store shelves?
Well, the article notes it is not a federally scheduled drug, and it is fully legal in 49 states.
With Louisiana being the only state to outright ban it?
Correct. But in December 2024, the FDA addressed this rapidly growing market. However, they did not schedule the mushroom as a controlled substance under the DEA.
So what did they do?
Instead, they approached it from a food safety perspective. The FDA declared Amanita muscaria and its active constituents to be unsafe, unapproved food additives.
So what does this all mean for the listener? It is not a federally scheduled drug, but the moment you put it in a gummy, it's illegal from a food safety perspective.
Basically, a legal loophole dictates the market. The raw mushroom itself remains legal to forage, possess, or sell. But the moment a manufacturer extracts it and puts it into a gummy candy or a chocolate bar intended for human consumption, it violates FDA food regulations. It becomes an adulterated food product.
Wow.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we navigate an era characterized by intense information overload and wellness fads that move faster than clinical research.
Which is exactly why you have to be careful.
Exactly. The massive chasm between the highly controlled, reversible silencing of neurons in a PNAS primate study and the totally unstandardized, legally ambiguous gummies sold next to energy drinks is the ultimate case study in why critical consumption of both information and substances is vital.
We started this deep dive trying to understand a famous red and white mushroom, and we learned that pop culture has fundamentally mischaracterized it. It is not a classic psychedelic that opens your mind. It is a gabergic deliriant that puts the brain's electrical firing in a chemical headlock.
Well said.
We explored the biological tug of war between the sedative muscimol and the excitotoxic ibotenic acid, where the brain is simultaneously flooded with stop and go signals. We looked at the genius of ancient Siberian shamans who understood how to use heat to alter molecular shapes, neutralizing toxins through decarboxylation, and filtering the rest through biological recycling.
And finally, we waded into the messy reality of the modern gray market, where internet myths drive the sale of unregulated, heavily adulterated products.
The fly agaric serves as a brilliant example of how easily mythology and marketing can obscure underlying chemistry.
But before we conclude, there's one final deeply provocative historical mystery that warrants your attention, the Soma question.
Oh, let's lay out the Soma mystery.
In 1968, a prominent ethnomycologist named R. Gordon Wasson proposed a massive historical hypothesis. He suggested that Amanita muscaria was the true identity of Soma.
And what is Soma, for those who don't know?
Soma is the divine mystical intoxicant, heavily praised and described in the Rig Veda, which is one of the most ancient and sacred Hindu texts.
The implication there is wild. That means one of the foundational religious texts of human history might be grounded in the pharmacology of the fly agaric.
It remains a fiercely debated and ultimately unproven hypothesis, though. Critics of Wasson's theory consistently point out a major procedural flaw.
Which is?
The Rig Veda describes Soma as being vigorously pressed and filtered through wool. That mechanical pressing process makes perfect sense for a plant stock, but it does not fit the physical reality of how one would prepare a fragile mushroom cap.
Right, that would just turn to mush.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Despite this criticism, the debate remains vibrantly alive in historical and anthropological circles. It leaves you with a tantalizing thought to explore on your own. Could the confusing, wavering pharmacology of this red and white deliriant actually serve as the chemical foundation of an ancient religion?
The next time you see that bright scarlet mushroom with the white spots, whether it is painted on a holiday card, rendered in a video game, or drawn in a vintage children's book, look past the deceptive packaging. It is not just a cute cartoon, and it is certainly not a magic psychedelic. It is a complex, potent, chemical tug of war wrapped in a fairy tale. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay insanely curious.